This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Federal agencies continue to pursue government-wide initiatives, such as reforming federal IT, using new technologies to improve government operations and citizen engagement, and enhancing customer experience across government. To be successful in their efforts, agencies require support and assistance, and the U.S. General Services Administration's Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies works to provide that support. It has positioned itself as the government-wide leader in identifying and fostering adoption of innovative new technologies. It does this by providing practical tools, models, and proven practices that agencies can use to improve efficiency and effectiveness of government operations while enhancing citizen engagement. How is GSA fostering adoption of innovative new technologies across federal agencies? What is GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies doing to expand government-wide open government and citizen engagement? How is GSA working to provide information where, when, and how the public wants it? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Kathy Conrad, Principal Deputy Associate Administrator of the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies within U.S. General Services Administration. Welcome, Kathy. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
And also joining us from IBM is Ken Beecher. Welcome, Ken.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
Kathy, perhaps you could provide us with a brief overview and history and evolving mission of U.S. General Services Administration's Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies.
Sure, I'd be glad to. So our role today reflects both where we've come from, our legacy of serving the public, and our role today as an engine of innovation to help agencies across government meet rapidly changing needs. We have a pretty interesting history spanning over 40 years, which most people aren't aware of. Our roots were planted way back in 1970 with the establishment of the Consumer Information Center, which provided the public with a central source of government information. It's evolved over the years, and in 2002 became the Federal Citizen Information Center, or FCIC, when GSA created the Office of Citizen Services and Communications. At that time, GSA combined the center's 30-year legacy of serving the public with the innovative approach of what was then called FirstGov, which used the rapidly growing power of the Internet to serve as the first sort of single front door to the government. And then more recently, in 2010, the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technology was created, returning GSA's internal communications back to its own office and adding the Office of Innovative Technology to expand our role in leveraging new technology to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of government. So today we have a dual mission. Mm-hmm. We deliver world-class experience to the public when accessing government information and services anywhere, anytime, through whatever channel they choose, building on our long legacy, and then developing solutions and services federal agencies can easily adopt that will enhance their ability to innovate, deliver services, engage the public, and save valuable resources.
So to get a sense of the understand the operation of your office, how is it organized? What's the size of its budget, number of full-time employees?
Well, we have a very lean but incredibly productive office, about 100 super talented, hardworking people, plus a team of excellent contractors, and a budget of about $35 million, pretty small. But we're a little spark plug, igniting innovation all across government through two primary organizations, the Office of Citizen Services and the Office of Innovative Technologies. The Office of Citizen Services provides consumer information and services to the public, wherever, whenever, and using whatever device or communication channel they choose. The Office of Innovative Technology identifies and fosters innovative technologies that help agencies increase efficiency, enhance effectiveness of services to citizens, and achieve cost savings. So most of our programs are divided into those two offices. We've got, as I said, the Federal Citizen Information Center, which runs USA.gov, Gobierno.gov, Kids.gov, the National Contact Center, and PublicationsUSA.gov. We have the Center for Excellence in Digital Government, which runs our Challenges program, which you're familiar with, and supports the Federal Web Managers Council. We have a mobile PMO, which has more recently been combined with our Digital Services Innovation Center. And then in the innovative technology arena, we have the Federal Cloud Computing PMO, our FedRAMP program, Federal Data Center Consolidation Program, and data.gov, along with a few others.
Wow. Kathy, I'd like to focus more on your specific responsibilities as Principal Deputy Associate Administrator of GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies. What are your duties and areas under your purview? And just as important, how do your efforts support GSA's overall mission?
Well, that's a good question. We have a very, very broad portfolio. And given that, as principal deputy, I help oversee all of our programs, all of our projects, and our staff to ensure that we're achieving our goals and delivering great value to our customers. In terms of some of the things that I more directly lead, I work very closely with our colleagues in OMB and OSTP on key policy and program initiatives, work very closely with our congressional affairs staff and with the Hill on oversight. And in terms of how we align with GSA's mission, Dan Tanglerini, our acting administrator, has been referring to GSA as the government savings agency. And we support that mission directly, emphasizing our role in providing real tangible value to agencies and the public. We provide shared services and platforms that offer significant savings by avoiding the need for every agency to build or acquire their own systems or deliver duplicative services to the budget. So, in fact, in FY12, we estimate that by offering shared services and solutions, we'll avoid government cost savings of about $76 million, which is more than double our budget.
So with such an expansive portfolio, what are the top management challenges you face in your role, and how have you sought to address them?
Well, you know, given budget constraints, which everyone is struggling with, probably the top challenge is how to carefully prioritize how to invest our funds to meet rapidly changing customer needs and expectations. We have a really small team, but everyone is just bursting with big ideas and tons of enthusiasm. And we need to find ways to really prioritize, because we can't do everything. We just don't have the funding. And I think as agencies are facing their own budget constraints, they really want to make sure that the services that they're receiving from us or other parts of GSA are really targeted towards their highest priority needs. So how do we do that? Well, we use analytics to really determine what our customers need and want. And then we focus relentlessly on customer experience to ensure that we are continually delivering high value to those customers. We also have really worked hard to create a culture of collaboration, innovation, and iteration. We kind of eat our own dog food in the innovation arena and use both agile methods and iterative development to test and improve new programs or projects as we go. And this allows us to meet emerging needs without having to take big budget bets, which in today's climate just don't make sense. So most of what we do, we released first either as a beta program or on a very limited scale. FedRAMP's initial operating capability is a good example. Or if you look at our own, at our web usability testing program, which is still to this day called First Fridays, even though we now do testing not just on the first Friday of the month, but often throughout the week.
Along with the challenges you've encountered, leading an organization can also be fraught with unanticipated surprises. To that end, what has surprised you most about leading your organization?
Probably the incredible talent pool that we have. I could have never anticipated how much talent we have among our relatively small staff. We just have an amazing group of incredibly smart, incredibly motivated people who are talented in arenas all across the board. The other part is how quickly we can deliver. So we not only have people who are really competent and knowledgeable, but we really know how to deliver as a team. And so whether that's standing up a new program like Business USA in just 90 days or ramping up our national contact center in a few hours to provide accurate information to the public in the face of an emergency, we're really able to mobilize fast to take ideas and turn them into valuable solutions for our customers.
How is GSA fostering adoption of innovative new technologies across the federal government? We will ask Kathy Conrad, Principal Deputy Associate Administrator of GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. How can we enhance national competitiveness? What about getting big things done in government? And how can government better manage risks and use resources more wisely? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. Hear from Comptroller General Gene Dodaro, SSA Commissioner Michael Astrew, Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Robert Papp, NGA Director Tish Long, and Aaron Connaughton on the Air Force's strategic vision. All of this and so much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. The IBM Center for the Business of Government has recently published Governing to Win, Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches, edited by Chuck Pro, which brings together insightful essays by leading thinkers and practitioners that offer a long-term strategy to improve national competitiveness. How can our nation better compete in today's global economy? And how can moving to an Enterprise USA approach in government enhance our national competitiveness? This book explores these questions and so much more. Governing to Win is available at bookstores, online booksellers, and from the publisher, RomanLittlefield.com. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Kathy Conrad, Principal Deputy Associate Administrator, the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies within the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher. So, Kathy, before we delve into specific initiatives, would you briefly outline your office's strategic vision and highlight some of the key priorities that frame the direction in which you're taking the office?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we have a dual mission to deliver innovative services and solutions to the public and to our government agency customers. So to deliver our mission, we have three key strategic goals. Innovation, which we define as expand and enhance public engagement with government using innovative, cost-effective solutions and practices that can be adapted and adopted government-wide. Second, customer intimacy, as I mentioned. And there we want to deliver best-in-class customer experience that is driven by results and that other agencies can use. And finally, operational excellence. Develop, implement, and accelerate adoption of new technology platforms and initiatives that can improve operational efficiency and effectiveness across government. We seek to foster federal leadership in implementing solutions that are faster, cheaper, and more sustainable.
You know, Kathy, you mentioned earlier that you have a very close and tight relationship with the Office of Management Budget. And as you know, OMB is mandating a cloud-first policy, and your office is the government-wide lead on making this effort successful. To that end, would you elaborate on the Federal Cloud Computing Initiative? What are the benefits and challenges of pursuing a cloud-first approach?
Okay, I'll try to answer that.
All right, thanks.
So cloud-first has driven a major shift in IT planning and procurement. It's forcing agencies to consider whether there are better, more agile ways to use scarce IT resources to enable achievement of desired program and mission outcomes. It's important to remember cloud computing is not about the technology. It's about mission enablement. So what is it? Lots of different definitions, but I think the best way to think about it is as a utility, where you buy the services you need to meet real-time demands. Cloud solutions offer infrastructure as a service solutions like servers and storage that can be used to host websites and meet other requirements, software as a service for applications such as email, or platform as a service which can be used for testing and development, other requirements. In terms of benefits, there are really three key benefits. First, it's cheaper. Services are automatically delivered and consumed as they're used, which means you only pay for what you actually use. agencies can shift from owning and maintaining costly physical assets to managing service delivery, reducing the need for ongoing capital expenditures. And cost savings are also achieved from aggregated demand. If you can aggregate demand across an entire enterprise, you benefit from economies of scale and save significant funds over the long term. Second, it's actually better in terms of performance. On-demand services enable flexible, rapid response to dynamic business needs. So you know that as your needs change, you can get the services that you actually need. And it's faster. You can provision services rapidly and automatically, dramatically decreasing time to deploy or implement solutions. So it's better, faster, and cheaper. Seems like a pretty good deal.
Absolutely. And as a follow-up, what has been accomplished in this area to date, and what implementation issues have you encountered, and what remains to be done?
So we launched FedRAMP's initial operating capability in June. And to date, we've accredited 15 third-party assessment organizations and received over 50 applications for FedRAMP assessment and authorizations. In the data center consolidation program, as of August, 318 data centers have been closed to date, and there are 932 planned closures by the end of 2015.
So, Kathy, you've mentioned FedRAMP, which is the Federal Risk Authorization Management Program, a couple of times in our discussion. Would you tell us what exactly that is, and how does it seek to accelerate the adoption of secure cloud solutions?
Okay, so FedRAMP initial operating capability was launched in June following 2 years of extensive collaboration with both government and industry to develop a do-once, use-many-times approach that saves cost, time, and staff needed to conduct cloud security assessments. FedRAMP has four primary components. It's established a baseline set of mandatory security controls that are based on NIST 853 standards for low and moderate impact systems. It establishes a consistent, rigorous, independent assessment process, including accreditation of third-party assessment organizations, which we call 3PAOs. We couldn't resist the idea to come up with a new acronym, which must be used under FedRAMP. And it introduces the use of provisional authorizations, which are granted by a joint authorization board composed of the CIOs from DOD, DHS, and GSA. Provisional authorizations can be leveraged by agencies across government in granting their own authorities to operate. And finally, FedRAMP shifts the government towards real-time assurance through the use of continuous monitoring. So the combined use of baseline security controls, consistent security assessments, and provisional authorizations gives agencies the high trust and confidence they need to leverage existing ATOs rather than conducting their own duplicative expensive assessments each time they implement a cloud solution.
So can I just clarify, if they use FedRAMP, they won't need to do their own ATO?
They still, under FISMA, agencies are still have the statutory responsibility of granting their own ATOs. But instead of starting from scratch, they can leverage the existing ATOs, which will be maintained in a secure repository. And then if they have requirements that are above and beyond the FedRAMP baseline, which, by the way, we hope will not often be the case, they can assess those requirements in addition to what is already included in the security packages that are the basis of the ATO they're reviewing from the repository.
So, Kathy, my next question is around open government initiatives, and it's two-pronged. And first, I want to understand, how does your office transform citizen engagement with government? What prompted such efforts?
So there are really, you know, the president released the Open Data Directive back in 2009, and that really was the catalyst for the open government movement that we see today. And one of the things that we've seen is that while at the time that was really a pretty radical idea, it's become really baked into agency operations. People really now see that sunshine is the best medicine for data quality. I think the risk aversion that we saw in the early years of open data has really kind of evaporated. You still find it in certain areas, but there's a level of acceptance that open data is good for the government and even better for citizens. So where we are today, there are really three areas that define open government today. One is the transformation from focusing on the data itself to the impact of the data. Two, A shift toward a, really what's become a global open government movement, and three, the growth of the communities. And if you'd like, I can talk about each of those three areas a little bit. So for in terms of impact, you know, initially open government really focused on transparency, accountability, and citizen engagement. Those principles, as I said, are widely accepted and kind of part of just our government culture. So the emphasis has now expanded, and the future of data.gov is to focus on enabling data discovery, use, and impact, making sure that through APIs and open data standards, citizens, developers, and others can easily access and harness the value of data to develop new products and services that improve the quality of people's lives. So it's really about impact. And as is outlined in the digital strategy that was released in May, over the next 9 months, data.gov will be expanded to include a web API catalog that will serve as an interactive directory of information made available to the public by agencies via web services so that customers can more readily use that information. And again, it's about that use that is so critical. So every agency is required to post their APIs on their /developer pages that they're establishing under the digital strategy, and those will automatically be aggregated in data.gov's catalog. So some big changes along the way, but all that will focus on impact. For the global movement, one of the things that I've done recently that was really just invigorating was that we held a conference with the World Bank this summer on international open government. It was attended by more than 400 leaders from more than 50 countries, all of whom are working toward expanding the open government data movement. It was really quite remarkable. Governments around the world really have recognized the value of open data and transparency to drive economic development and citizen engagement. And while there was some focus on transparency, there was a real emphasis on how open data can help these developing nations prosper. Lots of emphasis on what's the economic impact, not just transparency and accountability. Along those lines, as is called for in the U.S. National Action Plan and in what we really consider a triumph of 21st century digital diplomacy and development, we've developed in less than a year an open source platform to enable governments around the world at any level to open their data to the public. So in March, the U.S. and the government in India proudly launched the Open Government Platform, OGPL, which is this new open source product that includes the code, tools, and processes that help government to manage and release their data and will enable developers, analysts, journalists, academics, and the public to put this data to work. The full package, which is in early release, is available for download, comments, and open source development at GitHub. We'll be supporting OGPL in several countries, beginning with Rwanda this fall.
I'd like to focus in on two particular initiatives, challenge.gov, and you mentioned already data.gov. Can you tell us a little bit about these initiatives and what are the benefits and where are they to date?
Okay, so as I mentioned, with data.gov, we're driving towards an API catalog. We've also been establishing communities in key sectors to engage and collaborate around new ways to analyze, visualize, and use the data. As I said, data.gov really can't just be about the data. It has to be about its potential for use, deriving value from the data, not just analyzing it. So currently, data.gov hosts 15 communities, which we've built in collaboration with agencies across the government in areas such as health, education, law, energy, oceans, safety, ethics, sustainable supply chain. We've had these really cool data jams and data paloozas to spur entrepreneurship, create value, and create jobs while rigorously protecting personal proprietary national security information. The safety community had a data palooza that brought together people who used the data available on data.gov to save lives. And we saw some really amazing, really cool apps at that data palooza. You want me to tell you about a few of them? So Pulse Point was from the San Ramon Fire Protection District and is a life-saving mobile app that allows CPR-trained volunteers to be notified if somebody nearby is in need of emergency assistance. We saw some commute and crime maps from Trulia that allow home buyers to choose their new residence based on important factors such as commuting times and crime rates, which would otherwise never be available, or at least not easily so. And then we saw a really cool hurricane app from the American Red Cross that allows citizens to monitor storm conditions, prepare families for emergencies, find help, and let people know that they're safe even if there's no power. So that's where things are with data.gov. If data.gov makes data discoverable and accessible, challenge.gov offers a new tool and platform to engage the public in harnessing the value of the data, as is documented very, very well and very thoroughly in your recent excellent report on challenge.gov. So challenge.gov is a crowdsourcing platform for challenges and prizes for solutions to government problems. Many of them use open data sets. It's important to note that agencies are actually authorized to conduct these competitions and contests under the American Competes Act. There's still some skepticism about whether agencies can really do this. And in fact, they not only can do it, they are doing it. When we launched challenge.gov back in 2010, we had 35 challenges from 15 different agencies. As of this week, we have 211 challenges from 47 agencies, an average 7 new challenges a week. Some of the benefits of using challenges are that it's very cost-effective. You pay only for successful entries or solutions, so you're not paying for anything that you don't, in fact, really want and that doesn't meet your criteria. It allows for really, really broad engagement. Innovative and ideas and expertise is tapped from well beyond traditional sources. And it allows the government to partner with the private sector to fund or expand prizes, and has proven to be really just an amazing tool for achieving big breakthroughs where solvers invent products, write software, design systems, develop mobile apps, create videos, games, and more. It also creates a social network of people who care about an issue, who can follow and vote and share information about the challenges through email, Facebook, and Twitter. So that builds awareness and interest in critical agency policy national issues at much lower cost than a traditional communications campaign might do. So some of the examples that might be of interest. USDA had a really great challenge on apps for healthy kids that was sponsored by First Lady Michelle Obama. Winners included a game called Hungry Hiker that was in the Denver Science Museum that allowed kids to guess if they fueled their body with different fuels, how quickly they could hike to the top of a mountain. Quickly became apparent that candy alone wasn't going to make it. Another one that I personally love called Explode Your Food, because anybody who has kids knows that kids love to play with their food, and this allows you to put virtual food into a machine, and it blows it up, makes a really lovely, wonderful mess, and analyzes the nutritional content. Today, there are a couple of really great challenges that are going on today. In fact, the Department of Treasury is holding a ceremony to announce the lucky winners of their My Money App Up Challenge, for mobile apps that can offer consumers faster, more convenient, and better access to financial products, services, and tools, and information to empower consumers to make better, positive financial choices. There are 8 finalists, one of whom will win the $10,000 grand prize. There's also a really neat contest going on sponsored by the White House Council on Women and Girls. It's called the Equal Futures Application Challenge to promote development of apps that inspire girls to serve as leaders in our democracy and promote civic education. So those are just a bunch of examples. There are many, many more on challenge.gov.
How is GSA working to provide information where, when, and how the public wants it? We will ask Kathy Conrad, Principal Deputy Associate Administrator of GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. The IBM Center for the Business of Government has recently published Governing to Win, Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches, edited by Chuck Pro, which brings together insightful essays by leading thinkers and practitioners that offer a long-term strategy to improve national competitiveness. How can our nation better compete in today's global economy? And how can moving to an enterprise USA approach in government enhance our national competitiveness? This book explores these questions and so much more. Governing to Win is available at bookstores, online booksellers, and from the publisher, RomanLittlefield.com. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Kathy Conrad, Principal Deputy Associate Administrator, the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies within the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher. So, Kathy, social media is ubiquitous. Would you tell us more about how your agency is helping federal agencies leverage these platforms? And more specifically, to what extent has your agency expanded its use of social media channels for outreach and public engagement?
Well, you're absolutely right. Social media has just exploded across government. In our office, we found that social media is reaching our customers at a rate that is orders of magnitude higher than traditional communications channel. As of August, we interacted with citizens 2 million times this year using new media, which is a 305% increase from last year. So there's no doubt that you just have to pay attention to social media. That's how where people are going. It's not at the exclusion of traditional communications channel, but we are using social media extensively for USA.gov, GoBierno.gov, Data.gov, in the Center for Excellence in Digital Government, really in everything that we do. So as part of our mission to share best practices, share guidance, and provide training, we recently launched a very innovative social media community of practice, which has established a dedicated community of nearly 300 social media managers and directors from all mission areas across government, including intelligence, healthcare, scientific and regulatory communities, really just about every agency. And they meet regularly to identify and find solutions for some of the common challenges faced in using social media, such as improving social media performance metrics, and they test new tools and strategies that will shape the future of digital citizen engagement. We also recently released a social media registry, which is a central authoritative registry of authentic government media accounts, which enables the public to much more easily differentiate legitimate government social media accounts from those that are fraudulent. Unlike regular, say, websites, you can't, social media doesn't have .gov or .mil. So this registry would allow somebody who couldn't otherwise tell to determine, oh, yeah, this really is an agency social media account. It currently lists over 21 accounts across 65 agencies and is being used to verify legitimate government accounts for over 20 frequently used social media tools, including Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. The other thing that's kind of cool about it is that it was built with open source code and has a public API so that it opens up an entire world of potential innovation. So we're finding that government developers and the public can use it to access and search social media content from all agencies with convenient widgets and data mashups. And private sector developers are already talking with us about potential uses that they see. So that's really it's a great example of how we're helping agencies stay ahead of the curve and stand at the forefront of using social media to improve citizen services and achieve cost savings.
Kathy, you mentioned earlier in the opening segment that for more than 40 years, GSA has provided consumer information and services to the public. And in fact, you provided some really neat and dynamic examples at the World Bank and data.gov. Would you tell us more about your work with federal agencies to ensure that government information is made easily available and fully accessible to the public?
Yeah, the Federal Citizen Information Center works with other federal agencies to publish and distribute millions of publications each year to give the public valuable information on consumer problems and government services, things like home mortgages, health, consumer finance, consumer protection from fraud and scams, government benefits. And just to give you a sense of how much demand there is for these publications, I found this just astonishing when I first got to GSA because the first year it happened right after I got there. This year, over 1.6 million publications were ordered in just 24 hours following a column in Dear Abby promoting our women's health publications. Yeah. So clearly a lot of demand. It also shows you that Dear Abby still has it. Last year, we distributed a total of over 25 million publications and close to 10 million copies of our catalog. So these are agency publications, not GSA. So we're providing a real service in bringing this information to the public. But we also recognize that to be more sustainable and to reduce cost, We began digitizing print publications and offering them in a variety of e-publication formats so that they can be easily downloaded onto tablets, smartphones, e-readers, other mobile devices. We also entered into a partnership with Google Books and began electronically distributing over 100 government consumer publications for free. So we have a new website called publications.usa.gov that has 600 government consumer publications from agencies across government that can be viewed or downloaded in a variety of formats. And for those who really are still holding on to their print, they can order copies from our Pueblo, Colorado distribution center.
As a follow-up, how does the USA Search tool factor into your efforts to transform the public search experience while also saving money for federal agencies?
Well, we're enormously proud of USA Search. It has really transformed the public search experience and saved the government, we calculate, over $20 million each year from agencies using USA Search, which is an open source search solution rather than investing in duplicative costly services. It's a commercial grade search engine that quickly delivers very rapid, totally relevant government-centric information without the ads that are found in commercial search engines. It's been absolutely optimized for use by government information and provides results generally within about 400 milliseconds. Right now, there are over 1,000 websites across government using USA Search, including major agencies such as DHS and DOD. And, of course, it powers all our websites, including USA.gov, Kids.gov, and Gobierno.gov.
You know, what other ways does your office seek to enhance the public's experience and provide it new ways to find information where, when, and how the public wants it?
So the National Contact Center is a good example of other ways in which we enhance public's experience. It provides direct telephone, email, and web chat services to the public at 1-800-FED-INFO, as well as contact center and print distribution services for many other customer agencies. We answer more than 1 million phone, email, and chat inquiries each year on all federal government topics. So similarly, you know, central resource for anything you'd want to know or find out about the government, and also takes orders for the consumer publications I mentioned earlier. To provide consistent and accurate information to the public, the National Contact Center maintains a comprehensive knowledge base of more than 2,600 answers to frequently asked questions. Those answers, which are used by our contact center agents, are also available to the public on answers.usa.gov. Another role for the contact center that most people may be unaware of but is really vital is that we partner with agencies during emergencies. So within minutes of earthquake, terrorist attack, hurricanes, all the things we hope never will happen, the National Contact Center will ramp up and provide 24/7 service to the public so that they can seek help or provide information to our government partners. Another good example that may be less well known is our First Fridays program that I mentioned at the start of the info, which is a free, very practical usability testing program that identifies key user experience issues with government websites. It's very, very practical. Its purpose is to identify problems and recommend solutions that can be implemented by the agency's own team within 30 days. So we are regularly testing websites across government and providing advice and assistance to help optimize those for best customer experience.
So, Kathy, with the widespread use of mobile technology and devices, it illustrates a changing landscape. To that end, what is your office doing to assist federal agencies to develop a citizen-centered path to mobile government?
Well, the focus is really on making data and content available to citizens wherever they are, whenever they want it, using whatever device they choose. A good example of some of the neat stuff that we're doing is we held a mobile Wikathon with USDA. So you might say, what on earth is a Wikathon? Well, it's kind of like a hackathon, but instead of developing software code, participants contribute content to document all the great ideas and practices in a wiki that can then be shared across government. So agencies who've been mobile innovators can share how they've solved particular problems and the lessons they've learned. It's a pretty fast, fun way to quickly capture valuable, useful information in a format that's easily shared and consumed. It addresses both immediate needs, and we're also anticipating emergent needs in, as you say, this really quickly changing space. You know, people have problems they're trying to solve, and others have solutions they want to share. So in this time of rapid technology change, needs are evolving quickly, and so are we.
Yeah, Kathy, I know you and your office are highly enthusiastic about social media, innovation through apps, mobility, but I also know you have a passion for collaboration. Would you elaborate on your efforts to facilitate the adoption of collaborative technologies to not only enhance citizen engagement, but also increase operational efficiency and deliver quality services government-wide?
Yeah. Again, this is an area where I could really talk about anything in our office,
right?
Because just about everything we do achieves those objectives, or at least we certainly strive to. But let me focus on two programs, HowTo.gov and the Digital Services Innovation Center that was stood up under the digital strategy. HowTo.gov is the authoritative source for federal requirements and best practices for managing government customer service channels, which includes websites, social media, contact centers, and mobile. Provides training, guidance, best practices, and shared tools to thousands of federal, state, and local government professionals to enhance customer experience with government. The content is organized into topical channels such as web content, social media, technology. We recently added a contact center channel with best practices to help agencies set up and manage a highly effective contact center. About 45 agencies regularly use HowTo. And we find that the collaboration that occurs in not only using the information in HowTo, but the content that we help cull from around government really helps share practices in ways that are extremely efficient and very, very effective. The Digital Services Innovation Center is, as I mentioned, just was stood up just this summer in response to the digital strategy that was released in May. And it's not some big building filled with thousands and thousands of people, but rather it's an agile virtual center that helps identify opportunities for sharing existing solutions at agency and serves as a catalyst for leveraging successful models, proven practices, and solutions, and is also building some new solutions for government-wide use. And it will alleviate the burden on individual agencies to come up with these things themselves. The focus is on development of better digital services, again, as with HowTo, improvement of customer experience, and strengthening of governance. So what are some of the things that we're doing? Well, we have just completed facilitating a whole series of governance sprints to help agencies develop practical, effective approaches to digital services governance. And we've also developed a digital services performance metrics and customer satisfaction toolkit that's available on HowTo.gov to help agencies develop appropriate, effective measures, including baseline customer satisfaction metrics. We've now turned our attention to really three primary actions. One is we're identifying shared and open content management systems, and we'll be supporting implementation through training and, again, best practices on HowTo.gov. This will offer agencies an alternative to building their own platforms and enable code sharing and modular development. And that we'll be doing through about November. We're also helping agencies develop web-based APIs to unlock valuable data. We're holding a series of APIs for Dummies webinars to help agencies move forward, and are working closely with a number of agencies to develop the open data guidance that will be issued in November under the digital strategy. And then finally, we'll be turning our attention to launch a shared mobile app development program in conjunction with the CIO Council that will help agencies develop secure, device-agnostic mobile apps. We'll provide an environment to help streamline app delivery, foster code sharing, and we'll be working on that over the next 9 months. So lots going on now, and lots coming.
So, Kathy, I'd like to explore what you folks are doing using data analytics to enhance the way you make decisions. Would you elaborate on how your office is using analytics to not only improve services and quality, but possibly identify new solutions and maybe new services?
That's a great question. Analytics are very well established in our office. They touch all of our programs and more than the 40 websites that we manage. We also provide, one thing that's interesting is that we also provide key web performance metrics and guidance to the federal agencies whose websites we support. So with Business USA, the agencies who we're collaborating with and providing content, we're feeding them analytics on the site so that we can work together toward really improving these sites with fact-based data, not just good hunches. So to make sure that our analytical data is accurate, relevant, and actionable, we operate within a framework that consists of common standardized tools, web analytics tools, customer satisfaction tools, data collection methods like page tagging, and central reporting across our websites and other digital services. We track all our web campaigns, pages, and topic popularity, as well as search engine optimization and marketing efforts across multiple digital channels on a daily basis. And we make decisions on content and on direction based on what the data tells us. So we're very, very data-driven. We're using third-party tools to collect and report web performance data and looking at social media analytics and, of course, also look at industry research. So we have a monthly performance analytic dashboard that drives all our decisions and really provides visibility on what our customer wants and how our websites are performing. The other thing we've done that's kind of neat is that we've put together an analytics wiki so that we have a one-stop shop for all of our office where we publish and store all of the monthly dashboards, reports on touch points or citizen interactions, and other analytical and industry reports that are relevant to what we're doing. We're also in the process now of building a dashboard that we'll use for all our eGov projects so that, again, we can have both an executive view and a project view of key indicators like cost, schedule, and performance, and can not only use that internally, but can also share it with our external partners.
What does the future hold for GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies? We will ask Kathy Conrad when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. The IBM Center for the Business of Government has recently published Governing to Win, Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches, edited by Chuck Pro, which brings together insightful essays by leading thinkers and practitioners that offer a long-term strategy to improve national competitiveness. How can our nation better compete in today's global economy? And how can moving to an Enterprise USA approach in government enhance our national competitiveness? This book explores these questions and so much more. Governing to Win is available at bookstores, online booksellers, and from the publisher, RomanLittlefield.com. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Kathy Conrad, Principal Deputy Associate Administrator, the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies within the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher.
Kathy, in an era of fiscal constraint, it's critical that agency leaders act with strategic intent and keep their workforce motivated to meet their mission. Reflecting on your leadership, would you tell us how you continue to keep your employees focused and motivated in face of being under the microscope recently and painful fiscal challenges and changes?
So the most important thing is to really focus on mission and meeting customer needs. We have a really passionate team that is absolutely committed to our mission. They see the value of their work every day, helping citizens get the information they need and providing services to agencies that help them deliver their mission more effectively and more efficiently. So we never lose sight of the mission, and that's really, really, I mean, it sounds kind of corny, but it makes everybody feel good about what they're doing. People love to come to work every day because they feel like they're doing something worthwhile. So even before the current top-to-bottom review that Dan initiated to really help us as an agency capture the tangible value that we're offering to our customers, we went through a process about a year ago where we really tried to harness and capture the return on investment, the value that we're providing to our customers. And as I said at the beginning, we found that we're achieving very significant cost savings for such a small little office. And again, that was very motivating because not only did people recognize that the work that they're doing helps people, but it is in fact adding efficiency to a government at a time where cost savings really matter. We also work very closely together to define priorities and make tough decisions that provide the highest value to our customers. And I think having that sense of we're all in this together, there's a lot of things we could be doing, but let's decide as a team, where do we have the highest value? That helps people feel good about the trade-offs that necessarily need to be made. The other thing that we're finding is that in these fiscally constrained times, agencies are really hungry for shared solutions that work. It's not enough to just offer cost savings. I mean, cost savings are great, but if you're offering kind of bargain basement services, agencies may not want them. So we're finding that by really focusing on customer and experience and making sure that we're not only offering solutions that save agencies money, but that actually get the job done and done well, there's increased demand for what we're doing. So if you combine a fabulous mission with lots of customer demand, it helps keep people motivated even when times are a bit tough.
Kathy, you've done a wonderful job of explaining all the work you do and how expansive your portfolio is, but you can't do it all by yourself. So I want to understand how you're leveraging partnerships to improve operations and outcomes. And more particularly, can collaboration and partnerships drive innovation?
Boy, absolutely. You are so right. Innovative ideas and programs cannot come to life in a vacuum, not a chance. So partnership and teamwork are at the core of all of our operations. We depend on broad input from the stakeholders we support through established channels like the CIO Council, the Web Managers Council, the Government Contact Center Council, the communities that we've helped establish, as well as through citizen engagement. You know, one of the advantages of using social media and of open government in general is that there are tools that we use to get direct feedback from our customers. And so we consider ourselves working in partnership not just with the agencies, but also with citizens so that we can understand what really is working, what do they really need, and how do we do our jobs better.
You know, your office has been consistently recognized as a world leader in public engagement and innovation. Now's your chance to gloat a little bit, Kathy. Would you tell us more about the various awards and recognition?
Well, we do have a pretty full awards case. In fact, we've been laughing, saying, gosh, what are we going to do with all these when we move to the new building and there's so much less space? So we have had a lot of honors and awards, and we're really proud of that. And it's, I think, the breadth of awards that we've received really show that it's not all about any one person. This is a team effort. We have talented people all across our organization, and I find it particularly gratifying that many of our awards recognize not only some of our super accomplished individuals, but also teams who've been successful. We were really proud last year that CIO Magazine honored Data.gov with their 2011 CIO Award. Dave McClure, who heads our office, was honored this year with an Eagle Award. And we also had, I think, over 10 Fed 100 awards. So again, just recognition all across the office. Our USA Search program won the Information Week 2011 Government Innovator of the Year Award, which was really cool. And we had 10 Federal Computer Week Fed 100 Award winners, two Rising Star Award winners, and then, of course, Dave McClure, the head of our office, was very appropriately honored with the Government Eagle Award this year. That was really, really fabulous. So we've had, I could go on and on, but that's a good example of the many awards that recognize the wealth of talent across our organization.
So what's next for government? Specifically, what emerging technologies do you think hold the most promise for improving government operations and citizen engagement?
So I think if you look at the digital strategy, you'll really see where government is headed. The key to really making government data and information open, accessible, citizen-centric, and secure is continuing to rely on web APIs, web services, so that agencies across government are unleashing the really wonderful content and data that they have in ways that it can be easily consumed by the public. And it's not just data, it's content as well. I think sometimes people think that this whole movement is just about data, but there's just as much value in the immense content that is just a treasure trove of information at federal agencies. When you think about the power of making all of that available to people anywhere, anytime, on any platform, and in a secure and reliable way. It's really just exciting to think about what can be done.
I'd like to stay on that idea of the future a little bit and talk about some of the major challenges and opportunities you think your organization will encounter in the future. And more particularly, how do you envision your office evolving to meet those challenges and seize those opportunities?
So I think obviously there will continue to be resource constraints. I don't think anybody